Hello and welcome to another week of the Widnes Rugby Chat podcast. It's episode 8 of 2025, and we record this one in the aftermath of Widnes's win over Doncaster, which myself, James Gordon and Matt Parsons will talk through very shortly. Later in this episode, we sit down with the latest new addition to the Widnes Vikings board of directors, Matt Roberts. Had a good sit down with him, so he'll be on later in this episode. Some really interesting things he answered, everything that I asked of him, and hopefully it'll provide a bit of an insight to fans from someone new to the club, or I should say new to the boardroom. He's certainly not new to the club. He goes and watches home and away. But before we get into that, Mike, we'll have a bit of back and to about the Doncaster game. What was your assessment of it?
Well, I'd say if it was to pick a word, I'd say it was probably an underrated result. I think even myself probably arriving to the ground probably ever so slightly underestimated how much had come out of that fuel tank, and I think you could tell. And you know, you're looking at the team sheets and the warm ups, and it was a real banana skin game, wasn't it? You're looking at that Doncaster pack, and it was probably arguably one of the worst, more trickier fixtures you could have had after, you know, what you said last week, the Lord Mayor show. And for large periods of the game, it was hanging on. There was, you know, they were poking the noses through. They were physical. They was probably winning the rucks more often than not. But this is an Alan Coleman team, isn't it? And they found a way yet again without being anywhere near your best. You know, I think Brad Hay in his post-match interview said in the first half, you know, the two good ball sets that Widnes got, we scored. Which, you know, full credit to the, you know, the halfbacks for that, playing on limited field position. You could tell, you know, your usual reliable, battle-hardened forwards that we've got, that they were sore, you know, and at times probably was hanging on in the, you know, in the fuel tank. But like I say, they found a way and they battled the way through, and it was by no means perfect. Kai Taylor-Ray, he takes the headlines, doesn't he? You know, I think we waxed lyrical last week about what he can potentially bring. The fact that, you know, he had a bit of a quiet game at our place, in fairness. We kept him quiet. And early doors, you know, you probably wanted to get him on the ball a bit more. And I think as a fullback coming in alone, we've seen it with Noah Hodgkinson, it's very difficult to hit the ground running, isn't it? You know, chiming into the line at the correct time. It's all about, you know, timing and, you know, having that relationship with your halfbacks, your hooker and your outside backs. And, you know, probably for half an hour, it was a bit clunky, maybe, potentially. But then right on half time, that was a pivotal try, wasn't it, to send Ryan Ince over in the corner. And then, obviously, you know, we've all seen in the second half, you know, he's the game breaker, isn't he? What speed and pace at any level can do. And, you know, Jack Owens, I think it was, found him. And by God, the lad's got pace, Annie. I mean, we knew it already, but watching it live on that side, Jesus Christ. I mean, I think not so much over the 80 metres, it was the 0-60, you know, the first 10, 20, 30 metres, how he went, you know, to top speed. I mean, crikey, I mean, I probably pulled an hamstring watching him. But fair play to Widnes and Alan. You know, realistically, I'd say we probably should have won at Batley and we probably should have lost at Doncaster, so it probably evens itself out. And I think we could probably all agree that, you know, this break that we've got now, it's probably come at a perfect time, because that squad looked out on the feet after that Doncaster game, and I think a bit of respite will do them good. And then we go again, don't we, for a for a quarter final against York, and I think there's going to be a big following going down there, and that should be a cracking occasion as well.
Yeah, I think, well, Alan Coleman mentioned in his post-match that Jack Owens was doing a lot of almost coaching of Taylor A in the game. I agree with what you said there about it's difficult for, with all due respect to props and, you know, maybe the middle forwards, is it's probably easier for them sort of players to come in on Geo Reds, because you basically just got to run hard and tackle hard, haven't you, basically? Whereas when you're a fullback, you've got to understand what the halfbacks are going to do. And I actually don't think Taylor A's necessarily got that at Warrington yet either. And I think it's probably no coincidence that the try you mentioned, which was a great pass for Ryan Ince, is when Widnes are on the line, which is a bit easier to sort of know where your place in the line is, as opposed to if you're attacking from deep or whatever. But ultimately, that game just highlights why you need the pace. You know, he actually was, the rest of the game, he didn't really have a great deal to do, but he came up with three key moments. So, okay, the try assist wasn't about his pace, but the other two moments were just purely about his pace. And that proved probably that it was pivotal in the second half. I thought Doncaster made a really poor decision to go for the penalty at 16-14. And I talked to Alan after the game, and I mean, he couldn't believe it that they went for it either, because at that time, I think if Doncaster had got another try, got 8 points ahead, I think it would have been really hard for Widnes to get back. I was sat, the Doncaster coach was sat probably about 10 yards to my left, and he signalled for the two, and I was just like, Craig Ollard missed a conversion from the exact same blade of grass. Now, if he'd have kicked the conversion, I would have took the penalty, because that would have put him 6 points ahead. But there's no real difference between having a 4 point lead and a 2 point lead, really, because you're then basically betting on the missing the conversion, aren't you? And they're just, even the pattern of the game, though, not even taking away the points element of it, I just think Widnes were wobbling at that point. And I think
they was in the ascendancy, wasn't they?
Yeah. Let's face it. Yeah, and I think that was a poor decision, and you know, and perhaps a reason why Doncaster maybe don't. I mean, they did well in the second half last season, and got up. They were comfortable in the Championship, but maybe they could be a better team with a bit more, maybe better management, better game management in them situations. I thought, like you say, it was a typical game where Widnes stay in the game without necessarily. I mean, I think they were in the game. I don't think it was a game that was 50-50, I thought, but it was another example of a game where if you stay in the game, you get a break or something happens, and if you nudge yourself in front, and that's basically what happened. They got the break for the Taylor A try, and ultimately they get the reward for staying in the game when moments like that happen. And I think that happens. It's credit to the team and the way they set up that they'll get wins like that just because they can stay in games. And we've seen it even in the Warrington game. And it goes to show that it doesn't really matter who you play. Being able to do that is actually quite a good habit to have. Well, I mean, you'd like to be able to absolutely batter a team at some point, but I don't really see Widnes doing that, and I don't necessarily mean that in a negative way. Just sort of saying, if people want to watch a competitive game of rugby, you probably just look out for wherever Widnes are, and you'll probably get one, no matter who comes out on the top of the scoreline at the end.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the nature of the Championship, though, as well, isn't it, mate? I mean, apart from, say, no disrespect, but arguably maybe Huntslet or London, you know, away from home, potentially, you know, a lot of, they are difficult, and it sounds a cliche, and it sounds like we say it all the time and people do, but it really is the most competitive division. It really is. Just something I'd like to kind of ask your opinion on, really, where you sat in the game, because so interesting of what you said about Jack Owens and Alan speaking about in coaching Taylor Ray through the game. That's really interesting, that, because from the stands, you don't necessarily see that. And one of the things that did stand out in my mind was obviously Taylor Ray, absolutely brilliant, you know, took the headlines, and quite rightly so. But in the isolation of Jack Owens playing centre, from a supporter's point of view, he was arguably, you know, quieter, you know, and maybe didn't have the same influence on a game as what he would at fullback, and potentially maybe, you know, took his qualities away. And you've got Joe Edge's 18th man. But what did you think of his performance? You think that's just a case of somebody who's not played centre for a while and he'll get better at doing that? Or do you think, do you know what, he actually had a good performance? And
I thought Jack Owens had a decent game. I thought he was playing against Riesling. He defended pretty well against Riesling, who I think will probably still play Super League, to be honest. I presume it's work commitments why, you know, he made the decision a couple of years ago to drop down to Doncaster. I still think he could get into some Super League teams. So I think there was that defensive side where I think Jack Owens helped. But I thought, I don't think the plan is for Jack Owens to stand in right centre or left centre and just stay there the whole game. And I don't think he did that. I thought in the first half he was trying to come across and get involved a little bit. And, you know, and I think ultimately, although Taylor Ray get the headlines for this 75-metre try, it was Jack Owens' awareness of, one, getting onto the loose ball in the first place to defuse a defensive situation, you know, a potential try situation for Doncaster. But two, it was being alert on the floor of where Taylor Ray was and releasing the pass at the right time to set him away. And so, I don't think the plan is necessarily for him to be a right centre in the traditional sense of the word. I think that's just ultimately the place in the team that you can fit him in if you do end up with Taylor Ray. I think I'd probably have Edging over Fleming, to be perfectly honest, if it came down to it. If everyone was fit, I think I'd rather see Joe Edge play left centre. But Alan Coleman's crying out for competition for places and stuff like that, and of course that helps. One thing that is a bit out of Widnes's hands is you don't know whether you're going to get Taylor Ray. Warrington have got a few injuries. You'd certainly like to go to that York game with him there, but of course Warrington have got the Challenge Cup game on the same day, and there's some question marks over a few of their outside backs. It's interesting though, because Warrington don't seem to, whereas some of the other, you know, like Saints have got what's the young lad called, Robertson,
yeah,
who's a fullback basically, but they're playing him at centre every week to give him the exposure to the first team, and he's doing really well. I've seen Saints quite a few times, and he looks really good. He looks dangerous. He looks threatening. You don't really look at him and think, oh, he's a player out of position. But it doesn't strike me that Warrington are intending to do that with Taylor Ray. You know, you're thinking, well, you know, I mean, we won't go over on about Alfie Johnson, but it's like they're not going to stick Taylor Ray out on the wing. Probably, maybe because of his size, he's not the biggest, is he? He's not the biggest lad. I mean, Josh Stoulis isn't the biggest lad either. But it doesn't strike me that that's what they're planning to do. So I suppose if that's what they're thinking, the only way Taylor Ray is going to play for Warrington is if Dufty gets injured.
Do you potentially worry, James, in terms of really interesting points? Actually, what you've just mentioned, and potentially, you know, that could fall for us with Kai Taylor-Ray and seeing more of him, and Sam Burgess's idea, especially after, you know, grabbing the headlines on Sunday, might be you go out and play fullback as much as you can, and that's your way of learning. But on the flip side, with the injuries and stuff like that, does it concern you at all in such a pivotal position where Widnes might be in a world where one week you've got Jack Owens at fullback, then it's Taylor Ray, and there's a swap over? Because, you know, obviously the spine at any level, it's crucial that it's consistent. Usually the sides who finish towards the top of the ladder, the spine tends to stay intact. Could you reckon that might disrupt anything, or concerns at all?
I think that's why Owens has got to play in the centres. So I'd almost be of the opinion that if they're hoping to get Taylor Ray, I'd almost consider if Joe Edge can put a run of games together and be fit, I would almost consider basically saying Fleming's the fullback and Fleming and Taylor Ray are the two fullbacks, and Owens is always at centre, but playing this sort of hybrid centre slash, you know, secondary fullback type role, which I think is what Alan Coleman obviously earmarked him, because they don't want Jack Owens stuck in the right centre, because he's a good rugby player, and he's creative, and he's got a bit more to his game than that, and he's experienced enough to know that he can adapt. So if he does need to drop in at fullback, he can and whatever. But I do wonder whether if we get to a point where Edge is back in the team and you're looking at, and Taylor A plays and Edge and Owens at your centres, I just wonder whether, rather than disrupting it too much, whether you say, right, we'll try Fleming at fullback in the games that Taylor A is not available. I think I agree with what you say. I think Warrington probably are of the opinion that he's better for him to play every week, even for Widnes, than to not. He's a funny one, because he was 18th man. He's been 18th man a couple of times for Warrington this season, and I find it peculiar that you would have a fullback as 18th man, because,
yeah,
you know, realistically, if someone goes down with a head knock, I mean, is having a fullback as your 18th man the best option? I'm not. Especially a player like, yeah, he's not versatile really in any way. He's a small lad. He's only really going to play fullback. They've surely got other players that you would play as 18th man. So if Dufty's fit, then I just don't see where Taylor Ray's not going to play for Warrington, basically. And I don't see any benefit in them having him as 18th man.
Yeah, I agree with that point. It's interesting, actually. I think it's probably more of a gamble by Sam Burgess, because I think the idea of it is like showing him that he's wanted and he'll get his chance and, you know, he's got a future at Warrington. You know, I think going back to the Saints scenario, we've seen that with Wellsby, didn't we? He moved, like, with, Robertson, and Wellsby did the same previous, where if you want playing fullback, he was getting in somewhere. I think with Taylor Ray, whether it works out to the same extent or not, I think for me, once Dufty's contract expires, I think the idea is they may give the shirt, try and hopefully he's ready for it, give the shirt to Taylor Ray and he's ready, and then they've saved a quota spot, obviously probably a bit of cash as well, you know, to spend elsewhere. I do think that is the plan.
Well, Warrington's big thing is that the big difference between Warrington and the other big clubs are that the other big clubs bring through their own players. And I know Warrington have started in recent years to blood a few more of them. They're trying to do it with Leon Hayes, aren't they? I'm still not convinced by that. I probably agree with you. They probably are earmarking Taylor Ray to do that, but at the same time, they've got to prove themselves to be good enough to do that. Thurlish was a fullback when he was coming through, and, you know, he's established himself as a winger. They might consider whether Thurlish would be the number one, but I think ultimately, from a Widnes point of view, you would like to know. I think you'd like to think that you can count on him being available as long as Dufty doesn't get injured. You'd like to think that. It's slightly different, isn't it, with the four? You know, Maxwood, for instance, there's any one of six Warrington players gets injured and Maxwood all of a sudden becomes an option. Whereas ultimately, as long as Matt Dufty's fit, Taylor Ray isn't really an option for Warrington.
Yeah, well, that's it. And, you know, from a Widnes perspective, you know, you do hope Dufty stays, like say, relatively fit, because off the basis of you know, Sunday, if he can bring that to a game, whether you're playing well, whether you're not playing well, he's got something that a lot of people don't have. And I say, you can go back to the Afaya days, and you even watch Bevan French in Super League, for example. And no, Bevan French is a complete different type of player, and his agility as well. But pace, it's so hard to defend against, isn't it? And certainly in a part-time league, that can count a lot. It's interesting you said about Max Wood, though, because I noticed, was it Luke Thomas? He went on loan elsewhere, and I thought we might have...
Luke Thomas.
Had a bite at the cherry with him, but obviously Kirky was back funny as well.
He's gone to Batley. I was always a bit surprised that we didn't see Luke Thomas play for Widnes when John Keir was the coach, because obviously John Keir is the Wales coach and Luke Thomas plays for Wales. I always expected him to end up turning out for Widnes, but for whatever reason he didn't. I know he got a bad injury last season, didn't he? But
seems him and Wood are in a bit of a battle of who's higher in the pecking order, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, I think Wood is certainly on the fringes of the first team at Warrington now. I think, I think he's next. He's the next cab off the rank, sort of thing, in terms of their forward pack. If you listen to a lot of their fans, they want him to add more. They need another forward, but. I think forwards, you know, with all due respect, again, I think forwards are less of a problem than filling the key positions. And we won't talk too much about the York game. In fact, this is all we're going to say about the York game. But ultimately, I think York would be a lot more worried about Widnes if Taylor Ray was playing than they would if he wasn't.
Absolutely.
Right then, let's go into the feature interview of this week's podcast with the new Widnes Vikings director, Matt Roberts. Matt, thanks very much for agreeing to do a podcast with me.
No problems. Thanks for having me, James.
Tell us a little, before we get into the nitty gritty and everything, what everyone wants to know, just tell us a little bit about your background and your connection to Widnes.
So as you can probably tell, and I think I said in the statement, I'm not from the town. So my dad's side of the family are from Widnes. So he was born and bred in Widnes. And as I said on the in the quote as well, my uncle was Tony Chambers, who was chairman of Widnes. So my first game, my first Widnes game was 99. Went to the Autocrest Stadium, as it was at the time, and saw us beat Lancashire Lynx. And then I was hooked from them, really. And I was fortunate enough to be able to get a ticket to our first ever Super League game in 2002 at home to Saints, which was a tight game, so they were a good team at the time. And yeah, then been following us home and away since 2002 through some ups and some downs as well. So that's really my connection with Widnes and the club, and that's how I've come to support them.
So you travel up from Birmingham for every for most games, so you're covering a lot of miles.
Absolutely, every game we're home and away, doesn't matter where we are, where we fly to, we're there. So yeah, travel them down, and it's just become the norm now, really. You know, all the Sundays and some Fridays and Saturdays, whenever it is, are taken out by traveling up and down to watch, and I wouldn't have it any other way.
Yeah, that's, you might be a bit like me, hoping to get Midlands Hurricanes away in a draw at some point, because I think that's the only, apart from Cornwall, that's the only professional ground I don't think I've been. So, we always seem to avoid them.
I think they're sat top of League One at the moment, so you never know, you know, and they've invested heavily in their squad this year, so you never know. I think they'll surprise a couple of people this year and perhaps be fighting to get promoted.
So what's a life like for Matt? What do you do for a living?
So I work in insurance. So something that I fell into, and is something that you don't always want to, you know, you grow up and want to be in insurance. So I work for a large insurance organization, and I head up the UK and Europe area of that insurance firm. So I travel a lot for work, but I ensure that my diary revolves around Widnes. That's something that I'm very certain of. So yeah, I have a team of about 50 people in numerous different countries in Europe that I'm heading up. So something I enjoy, something keeps me out of trouble. But yeah, it's something that I'm very fortunate to be successful in, which has then enabled me to be able to be sat with you and invest in Widnes.
Yeah, so how did it come about then? Like, did you just wake up one morning and think, I want to try and become a director of Widnes? How did it all happen?
It's actually, you'd think that would be the story, and I'd like to say I've been thinking about it for a long time. It was actually, I was sat at a game back in 2023, so a couple of years ago. It was John Keir's last season, and we were playing Sheffield at home. I remember it vividly, and, you know, there was not many people in there, and we were heavily beaten. I think we got a couple of tries at the end. And I remember on the drive home, I remember thinking, I can't accept mediocrity. That's something I've always been in life. I can't accept that. And I felt that I could help the club. The club felt like they needed something different, felt like they needed some help. And I thought, you know, it's easy, you know, as fans, we can sit there and be positive and then criticise, but I feel like I could make a difference. So I remember when Stuart came on board, Stuart Murphy, who's our chairman at the moment, I remember him saying in one of his statements that if somebody wanted to invest in the club, to reach out. So I was in London the next morning, so on the train down from London. I sent him an email and said, this is a little bit about me, it's my background. I feel I can really help the club off the field. And really all went from there. So that's how it started.
So obviously, you know, I know Matt Taylor has joined in the not too distant recent past. Obviously Stuart and Rod and Roger being around since the basically saving the club from administration. What does investing in Widnes Vikings look like? Is it you've bought shares off somebody and that gets you on the board, or is it a case of you're looking at something where you're investing on an ongoing basis?
No, so like a lot of companies, there are shares that you can buy. So I've bought shares into Widnes, and you know, when you buy a certain amount, then that gets you a board seat. So you know, I've invested money into the club, and I've bought shares, which then meant I'm able to sit on the board. And as you say, you know, Matt, Stuart, Rod, and Roger, you know, we're shareholders, and then on the board as well, we've got Joy, who's our non-exec from a legal and governance perspective. So that's really how it works. And then you know you are a director and you attend board meetings and so on and so forth, and everything that comes with being a director of not only a sport club but a business as well. So that's really how that comes about.
So you being part of the board now, what do you bring to the table? And you know, obviously this collection of people have all got different backgrounds, experience, etc. What are you, Matt Roberts, bringing to the table?
It's a good question, and something I spoke to Stuart about a lot when I was having the initial conversation. So one thing that I can bring is a balanced perspective. So whether it's a good thing or bad thing, I'm not sure, but I only go to Widnes and the town for the game. So you know, you can get really passionate and emotional in that game, but then you can come away from it. So you know, the rest of the board, some have been in around and really well known in the town, and that can sometimes be quite difficult. It's a good thing, but sometimes a bad thing, especially when the team aren't doing so well, as we have been over probably since coming out of liquidation. So one thing I can bring is a real balanced perspective, and also give some help from what I do in work around marketing, commercial strategy, looking at the IMG score. You know, we're all looking at that as well. So start to give a real different perspective to the club, that somebody who isn't from Widnes and doesn't live in the town sees it from an outsider really looking in, and some real you know, direction around what we're doing from marketing, commercial, media, IMG, because that is really important at the moment, as you know.
Yeah, you mentioned IMG. This was a bit further down my list, but seeing as you mentioned it, we'll talk about it now. Without wanting to pull any punches, the IMG score was embarrassing for Widnes, really, wasn't it? To come in 22nd place. What's your impressions been of the response? And you know, we heard from Stuart before Christmas about it, but now you're on board. What's Widnes's current position on that?
I think we'll see our position improve. I think, you know, Stuart said I said on the interview with you, because I listened to it myself, that there are some areas that were quick wins for us that we didn't take advantage of, which meant we found ourselves in 22nd or 23rd. And I too was shocked and disappointed with where we came in. We're doing a lot of work around getting those points up, because one or two points here and there can be quite a big difference. So we're constantly reviewing the IMG grading and what you have to do to get those points. I can't help but feel that might change soon with the overhaul that the RFL that have got at the moment, and that's very evident in the media at the moment. So look, you know, we will go with what the IMG grading is now, and we're looking at that. You know, we only discussed yesterday, we've got a meeting in to discuss where we are with that and what we can do to improve. And then you've got to weigh up, James, right, as you know, how much investment do you pump into something such as, you know, LED boards or LED screens compared to how many points you'll get? And that's because it's linked to central distribution and funding. So, you know, you've got to make those in as well. And then also you have to then factor in, you know, where does that money come from? Whether that's new investment coming or whether that's taken out the playing budget, then what knock-on effect does that have if you take it out of your playing budget? So I would say as a fan, it seemed quite easy, but now being on the board, that's quite a difficult thing to juggle and to balance. And we've got to get that right. But certainly we've made improvements to get those extra points to get us up there. And I certainly want to be in the, you know, when people are talking about who should be next in Super League, if some teams are coming out or if people, they're going to expand it, I want us to be in the, you know, in the same conversation as Toulouse, as London are at the moment, as Bradford. I don't see any reason why we can't be in that too.
Yeah, I mean, I think we touched upon it last week. Realistically, Widnes should be the next cab off, you know, amongst them, next cab off the rank, sort of in the top 16, maybe, on the score to get. And I think it was Rod who made the point about the screen. You know, is it worth spending a fortune getting a screen in place to get 0.125 points when, you know, that finding that money to actually buy one is actually quite a challenge, and you know, and spending that money on something else might actually help the club in a different way, you know, so further down, you know, instead of buying a big screen, if you ended up buying a load of tickets for kids and it raises the attendances, then you know, you get that there. You also have the challenge, of course, with the council. You know, it's not your stadium, it's the council stadium. What's it looking like with them at the moment? I know the council have got a few difficulties of their own. And Stuart seemed to be, you know, sometimes he's very positive about the council, sometimes it's perhaps not the same. What's the current state of play with them?
I would caveat from what I'm about to say is that I've only been on board since around February time, so I'm only seeing it from, you know, from a month in. And I think it very similar to what Stuart said and what you said, it can be up and down. You know, I think it's widely known that the council is struggling financially. So, you know, we have to... They're trying to find money and extra money. We've got to try and balance out what that looks like for us. So, you know, we've got open and honest dialogue with them. We've got constant dialogue with them, making sure that, you know, what they want from us, it also works for us too. So that's in Stuart and is managing carefully on and very well on a day-to-day basis, but also something that we as a board are cognizant of the fact that we don't want, you know, wholesale changes making, you know, for example, closing more of the North Stand, or you know, stuff like, you know, we want to make sure that it's a really good experience for fans who come, you know, to the ground. So it's just trying to weigh up that balance, which is difficult. But I think we're doing a pretty good job. Well, I say we, Stuart's doing a very good job. I think we're in a good place now, especially after, you know, they helped us out at the Warrington game, because that was something different to the norm. We don't usually get that many spectators, and you know, there's police involved and there's segregation involved, as you know. So you know, that helps out on that, and I just hope that it continues to be a successful partnership between us and the council.
Again, me and Mike talked about this last week's podcast, specifically about the Warrington game. It was a great occasion. It's hard to believe it was probably seven or eight years since there was an occasion like that. Maybe with the exception of the Featherstone game after the administration. I'm well, I suppose I'm in theory an out-of-towner. I have lived in Widnes previously for a few years, but I'm from Warrington. I live in Warrington now. You know, I'm a lot closer to Widnes than you are. But being as an out-of-towner to a point, for me, I'm always like, and I don't know whether this is me being biased, but the rugby team puts Widnes on the map. People only really know a Widnes because of rugby. And I always feel like the council don't necessarily make enough of that fact. And ultimately, without Widnes rugby, the stadium, you know, it's not like there's a massive queue of teams waiting to play at that stadium. So I'm always a bit like, surely someone somewhere has got to see the potential of how good having a successful club playing in that stadium is for Widnes and the wider community.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more with you, James. You know, when I speak to people down here and, you know, as I travel around a lot of the UK for work, a lot of people probably from the Midlands down only know Widnes for rugby. And that's, you know, the only reason I really go to the town, and a lot of the people go to town. So I completely agree with you. And there's a lot of things that we're doing in our foundation as well with Holton as a borough as well, you know, getting kids to try and get in rugby, getting kids out there, you know, bringing a beastie race down. So there's a lot of good stuff that we're doing. So I completely agree with everything you say that, you know, if we didn't have that stadium and we weren't in the stadium, then what does that look like for the council? I know the football team use it, but I'm not quite sure of the attendances they get, but certainly, you know, a lot of people go to there for the rugby.
Yeah, I mean, the football team are actually top of the league at the moment, but they only get a couple of hundred. And, you know, obviously they've got a planning application in to transform. I think, is it the ICI Rec? I can't remember where it was that they want to build their own little place somewhere. But then I also saw something on Twitter last week that said they've got something like 400, they've lost 100 grand this season, and they've got shareholders loans of 450 grand, which for an eighth tier football club is quite extraordinary. So yeah, this is certainly, you know, as much as you obviously like to see everybody do well, you can't imagine that they're going to get to a point where they can attract 5,000 fans into that stadium anytime soon. Is Super League a realistic goal? I know the IMG thing is almost probably the caveat to that. Is Widnes' position that IMG is better for Widnes, or is Widnes' position that bog standard promotion relegation is better for Widnes?
I think it's a good question, James. I think from our perspective, yes, absolutely, Super League is our goal. I think, you know, from how we saw Super League between 2012 and probably towards the end of that, you know, we had some really good nights and, you know, that stadium was full. And it felt like, I was only commenting after the Warrington game, that's probably the first time since being out of Super League, it felt like a Super League game. Obviously the Warrington attendance helped, but once we got a taste of it, it's something that you want on a more regular basis. Granted, we now have to look at the IMG licensing. That might be tricky for us. You know, because you look at other clubs in and around us, Toulouse, you know, they've got a good stadium and just where they are geographically, you know, we can't change where we are. London as well. And I think it's come out in the media that Gary Hetherington is going to be on board with them. So they'll be quite strong. But I think, you know, we do want to get back to Super League. What that looks like, whether that's through IMG or that's through promotional relegation, you know, our goal doesn't change. One thing we have said, though, it's got to be sustainable. So one thing we saw when we were in Super League only back in 2012, during that period, you know, we had one guy putting money into it. And as soon as that dries up, or as soon as that person doesn't want to anymore, then what happens? So whatever we do, we have to be sustainable. We have to ensure that there's a club still there. We don't want to go through what we did back in 2018-19. But where we probably sit today, I think I listened to your podcast last week. I think promotion relegation in the short term, if we want to get into Super League in the next year or two, promotion relegation would be the easiest way for us to probably get there, I'd say. Longer term, you know, if you're looking at a 5-year plan, which is what we've got as a board and we've devised as a board, then towards the end of that 5 years, you could be looking more towards an IMG licensing sort of situation, which, you know, I've got to say, I put on record that I'm actually in favour of that. It helped us back in 2012, and I like the idea of this licensing IMG grading. I think they have to stick to the parameters they set. You know, I think that it's been around for 2 years and it's changed quite a bit. I also think there needs to be a little bit of leeway around that too. So, you know, it was widely known you have to have X amount of media seats, and if you don't, I think it was 25. If you have 24, you lose the point. Your gantry has to be a certain measurement. So, you know, I get. And I like the idea you have to be a minimum level of standard. standards across the board, but I think there has to be a little bit of flex in there too. So going back to your question though, short term, I think promotional relegation would probably help us. I like to think, you know, Alan as a coach and the way our team play in a one-off game, we've got more of a chance. But then, you know, longer term, looking towards, you know, 3 to 5 years, probably more towards 5 years, IMG could help us too.
Yeah, you mentioned about that leeway. I mean, we was at Doncaster at the weekend and they actually didn't get the points for the LED screen because their UEFA standard LED screen doesn't match the IMG ones. And now if you're at that ground and you look at that screen, it's an LED screen. It's probably better than any screen I've seen this season. And they didn't get the point for that. And it's little things like that that, and I think they're the sort of things as well that turn fans off a little bit as well, because you're a bit like, well, flipping out, we've not got a point because we didn't have that. Or, you know, like say the media seats, Widnes, you know, there's probably 15, 20 empty media seats every week, you know, and to lose points for that just, you know, just makes it difficult to comprehend. Stuart's being big on the sustainability, and I know that stabilising sort of the finances and the reputation of the club to a point has been a priority during his tenure. Do you feel it's realistic to get to Super League without a money man these days? Most of the other teams now, you've seen what Derek's done at Lee, and you know, with what the Wakefield owner Matt Ellis since he's come in. Is it feasible for Widnes to really get there without having someone pumping some money in?
I think yes, because I think you now what I will say there is, would we be competing in the top four Super League without someone pumping a lot of money in? Probably not, unless you have a Leicester City type sort of situation where you go on a roll with some players and loads of confidence, no injuries. But I think so, yes. I think Wakefield have spent a lot of money on their team, but they've also had to spend a lot of money on their facilities. We've got the luxury, we've got that. And also, your revenue is linked to your on-field success is linked to revenue, right? So, you know, we've got you know, a stadium that can hold nearly 14,000 people if the East End could back and running. But the point I'm trying to make is, if you do well on the field and you get people coming through the door, buying season tickets, buying merchandise, get more sponsors on board from a commercial aspect, then you might find someone who can see what we can offer. And then they might want to invest. And then, you know, your investors grow, so you de-risk it from being just one person per million to maybe, you know, 5, 6, 7, you know, people investing in. So I think we can, and I think it is realistic. Now, that's not to say that we would win it in year one or year two, but that's what the licensing helped us back in 2012. I think that's what IMG would do, is it, you know, if you were strict promotional relegation, you'd probably struggle in that first year and you'd keep yo-yoing up between divisions. But, you know, if you got into Super League and you were given a good 2-3 year run at it, I can't see any reason why we couldn't be build on that and be successful.
Yeah, I mean, I think back to, it's mad really when you think back, I suppose it's 10 years ago now when Widnes were in Super League. Perhaps didn't realise it at the time, and maybe fans didn't appreciate it at the time, actually, how good it was. Widnes generally punched above the weight, weren't spending salary cap really, but had some really good, certainly I know there's a few, they always pop up on Twitter, the clips from the games, and you think, oh yeah, it was, you know, those times were great. And I suppose you're probably about a similar age to me, Matt, where, you know, we've never had any glory days as such. You know, I think I was one when Widnes won the World Club Challenge. But, you know, for anyone under 40, or maybe 40s, yeah, pretty much anyone under 40, Widnes haven't been particularly very good. So, you know, that period 2012 to, well, maybe 2013 to 2017 was actually the absolute peak probably of watching Widnes in our lives. But actually, at the moment, that feels quite, you know, getting back there actually feels quite far away.
Absolutely, James. I completely agree with you. And you don't realise how much you value something until it's gone. So I think at the time, you know, looking back, we have some incredibly good players, you know, Reece Hanbury, Kevin Brown, you know, from 117. I say now that team would probably be probably getting the top four of Super League, maybe in the top three of Super League. That's how good. I mean, the game's changed a bit, don't get me wrong. But, you know, I think we're making, I agree, and I think we're making steps towards that, you know, from where we were last year to where we were the year before under John Keir, which is, you know, sat at those games and it was incredibly tough to watch. I think we needed an overhaul of the squad, which Alan did. We brought Alan in, gave us a gave us a different approach and freshened things up. And we saw the benefits of that last year. And I think, you know, we need to, Alan's been very vocal of, we want to build on that this year as well. So, you know, you keep making those steps, you know, eventually we'll get back to success on the field. And if you keep being successful on the field, that drives everything off the field. And, you know, success to us might be going from fifth to fourth or fifth to third. You know, our long-term goal absolutely is Super League, but, you know, there are some short-term goals to get to that. And if you keep being successful and doing the right thing on and off the field, you'd like to think that we would get there.
Yeah, you mentioned Alan there, and, you know, he seems like someone who's in it for the long haul. But of course, you've got to keep him happy to keep him in for the long haul. You know, great achievement reaching the playoffs. Widnes hadn't done that since relegation. Obviously, there's been the situation with players this season where there's a few players come in and being released, you know, to get game time elsewhere. And people, I think fans sometimes get a bit, oh, the squad's really thin. And I've tried to caveat that a bit recently because it is hard. You know, I've done a lot of work in semi-professional sport in my life, and it is hard to keep players happy if they're not playing, because ultimately they come to training two or three nights a week. If they're not playing on the weekend, well, what's the point in them coming to training? How do you find that balance between, well, how does the club find that balance between trying to build something, but also the realities of the week to week, if you like?
Yeah, you're right, James. And I think that was an unfortunate situation for us. You know, when we saw three players go in quite quick succession. You know, Alan, mindset was Alan took a strategy of looking for, you know, having a smaller squad, but quality. You know, you could have a squad of, I think we had on John Keir, where you'd have 25, 26, 27 players, but trying to keep them all happy is difficult. In the situation of the three players we spoke about, you know, they would play wing or centre, so we probably wanted to loan them out. But the reality there is, as you come into the season, most clubs have got all their loan players are taken, or they're in dual age with another club. And wingers, you can only play two of them. It's not like a prop or a forward where, you know, you can have four, you can carry X amount of forwards in your squad. When you've got two wingers who are playing well, that's tricky for somebody to use a loan up for a winger. So, look, it wasn't ideal timing, and we were thin on the round, but we also had, we got Reece Williams in on a short-term contract. We had Jack coming back because he was injured in the Crusaders game. He was coming back, and we saw Ryan Ince come back as well. So, you know, in that position, we were covered. And I think it just comes down to unfortunate timing and situation. You know, we will, Alan has said, and we will never stand in the way of, you know, young guys wanting to go and play rugby. You know, that's why they do it. So, you know, we don't want them sat on the bench or not even getting the 21, but not playing. That's just not helpful for the player or for the club. So, you know, ideally you would loan those players out, but then I think that becomes difficult depending on what position you play. So had we had a forward or a second row who was a young guy building up, I know we've got Brett Bailey, but, you know, he's just coming back from an injury, that you could almost loan those out to people looking for that position. Whereas in the wing centre, they're normally, especially in the season or coming up to the season, their wingers are set in stone, so they don't want to use a loan spot for that position.
Yeah, like you say, because they can get a Super League player in, you know, at the drop of a hat, basically, because, you know, Super League clubs, I guess it's because people are looking at, you know, probably certain fans are still looking at Widnes like they're a Super League club. Yeah, you know, Warrington or St Helens have got academy teams, they've got reserve teams, but they've got the finance or the central funding to enable them to, you know, they can pay players to play for their academy. They can afford to pay for players to go and play dual reg. I mean, going off on a tangent, I actually think the Super League reserve team should play in League One. I think Wigan, Saints, Warrington, Leeds, I think if they put a team together, you know, as like a second team playing on a Sunday and played against Midlands and Cornwall and London Scholars and whoever, I actually think that would be the best way to grow the game, because they can afford to, you know, Newcastle played Cornwall at the weekend, and you're like, how on earth, you know how hard it is to run a club, how on earth a Newcastle who was struggling every week, how do they afford to go to Cornwall on a weekend to play, you know, part-time? It's just a weird one. Alan's been a bit, he wants to sign new players, as I'm sure, well, to be fair, every coach wants to sign new players. What does that look like? He comes to you, knocks... Well, I know you've only just been involved. He comes to the board, knocks on the door and says, I want a bit more cash, or he wants a new player. Is that solely dependent on whether a director wants to put some money in to enable it to happen, or is it a case of you look at the budget, if it's sustainable, you free up some funds and there's a player become available, you go for it?
Absolutely that. The latter, James, actually. So, you know, we had a board meeting, I think it was last week or the week before, the week after the Batley game, actually. And that was exactly the conversation that we had with Alan. It was around, and I said, I need these players. So we're lighting these positions. Okay, what players have you identified? Any players? What do those players look like? Are they available? You know, then you have to look at the cost involved that player. Then you ultimately, as a board, you decide whether we back Alan. And obviously, I can't sound here what decisions were made, but you know, you may see in the board you back Alan. Then you don't really get in, as a board member, you don't really get involved in player recruitment. You know, we pay Alan to do that and his staff to do that, and you know, we can give our opinions, but ultimately, he's the coach, and that's what we pay him to do. So that's how it works. You know, we just have an open discussion around these are the players I've identified, these positions, this is what I feel it can add to me. If we got that person in, then we'd free up to free this person up to play in that position or do that. So then it's a bit like a jigsaw effect, and a domino effect. So that's really how it works. We've had those conversations. And there are things happening in the background. One thing I would say is that, you know, I was on it when I was a fan and not on the board. Just because you don't hear anything doesn't mean nothing's going on. There are a lot of things going on at the club that, you know, fans shouldn't know, really, I would say. I think that's probably been fair, but there is a lot of things going on, and we will, as a board said, we will communicate and be honest as much as we can. But there is an awful amount of work going on behind the scenes to get players in. But then, James, you have to weigh that with, are we going to bring someone who's going to improve our squad? There's no point bringing someone and paying somebody who's just going to be what we've got already. So that's quite difficult. And then there's people at the, you know, those sort of players, they've got clubs at the moment. So if they've got clubs at the moment, what does that look like? So it's not straightforward player recruitment, but something that we're always looking at to improve.
Yeah, I mean, you have to look at the impact of Kai Taylor at the weekend, the Jewel Reg from Warrington, and you know, the dual red system is a debate in itself, but ultimately that freed up Jack Owens a little bit. It enabled Alan to play in a way that he identified he wants to play, but of course it's dependent on Warrington making him available every week, and you know, and that, I suppose that's one of the challenges. You mentioned there, Alan, is Alan taking a bit more on this season on that side of things? Because of course Chris Hamilton was at the club previously, you know, and I guess he dealt a bit more in that player recruitment side as well. Does that mean Alan's got a bit more responsibility for that now that there's no Chris Hamilton there?
I can only speak from what's done this year, because obviously I wasn't involved when Chris Hamilton was there. I mean, you know, agents and are constantly calling Alan, and Alan's looking at what players are available. Then he and Stuart, who, you know, in the press release, Stuart's taking on more of that day-to-day running, they would get involved and make the deal work. So yes, to a certain extent, but Stuart will be helping him as well. You know, for once identified a player, then they work together to make the deal happen.
You mentioned in one of the previous chats about communication, and this is one of the areas I think that probably Widnes haven't been great at, not just in this regime, but you know, for a very long time. How do you think, you know, personally, if you like, how do you think the club ought to improve that? I know Stuart did the thing with Widnes Vips last week, and which is great. My position on it, you might have heard me say this last week, is great, but there's only a very small number of people who go to them events. And probably, with all due respect, they're the diehards who'll probably go to everything, and fair play to them. But it's more communicating to the people beyond the diehards that I think maybe Widnes have had the problems with over the last however many years.
Yeah, absolutely, James. And I think we can communicate more, but you've got to try and find that balance. There's a tendency you can over-communicate, and then fans have an expectation. So then when, for whatever reason, it's a busy week, or we haven't got loads to talk about, then people then worry, why haven't you communicated as much? So, you know, you can go from almost not communicating to over-communicating. We need to find that balance. I think we can, you know, one thing I've become aware of is that there are some really, really good people who work for the club and who are on the board of the club as well. I knew of them, but didn't really know them. I think we could do more of that. You know, Roger, Matt, I know Stuart's been on your podcast, and a lot of people know Stuart Joy as well. You know, some really, really good people in and around the club. So I think we can hear from that and give a different perspective. You know, maybe, so, you know, the members Monday, I agree. That's only four people. So for example, I can't really get to members Monday because I'm working and I don't live in the town. So maybe we could do more video stuff, more of an update that way, or like a chairman CEO update potentially on a weekly / monthly basis. So it is something we are looking at and we need to do more of, but it's just trying to find that balance, because if you do that, you're going to have a finite amount of resource, right? If you do that, then something else might have to drop. So a bit like everything, you just got to find that middle ground and juggling that up. But it's something we should do more of, which is, you know, which is why stuff like this is really helpful for fans to see a different perspective on things.
Yeah, I mean, I'm always open if anyone wants to talk, you know, if anyone wants to come on, or if anyone wants me to do an interview with them, I'm always open to do that. To be honest, my eyes were opened a little bit to it when I remember, I mean, I'm not on the terraces as much anymore because obviously I end up working most of the games now, but I remember being at Dewsbury, I think, and someone came up to me and said, sort of, thanks for keeping us in the loop sort of thing, because they felt like listening to the podcast every week enabled them to know what was going on. I don't know whether they must have lived out of town, maybe, you know, that was the first time I'd really thought about it like that, in terms of it is an outlet for people to feel like they're hearing what's going on. And it might only be simple things, but I think people just like that assuredness. Of course, you don't get the local newspaper coverage that you used to get, you know, back in the day. You know, even a simple back page of the Weekly News, an interview with a coach or a member of staff, would make people feel like they're in the loop, whereas you just don't get that anymore. And it does make a difference just hearing from people, doesn't it?
Yeah, I agree, James. And I'm reviewing our marketing and media strategy at the moment. Something we can do more of. I think fans need to hear from us, so they feel as though, you know, when they pay, even if whether you pay from paying a season ticket, whether you buy merchandise, whether you buy one ticket, you've got to feel as though you're part of something. You've got to feel as though you're part of the club, and by doing that and by communicating, you're being open to them. Obviously, there's only so much we can communicate. We can't communicate everything. There's probably been an expectation that we should tell everyone everything, and obviously you can't. But, you know, as I say, we need to be open with what we can be, so fans feel part of it and you're all heading in that same direction as Widnes. That's what we need. That's what we need to get to.
What does the commercial side of things look like at the moment? I know the club's previously had staff in that area. Do you, you know, even again from a personal point of view, do you feel like the club gets enough support from local businesses, and is the club doing enough to get out there commercially?
Yeah, so we've got Simon, who heads up our commercial department. Again, I think we can always do more. You can never not do too much of that when you're a club who's relying on sponsors and local businesses. And we're thankful for the sponsors who are backing us at the moment. I think we can do more. I think we need to have more of a presence in the town. You know, granted, I only come on a Sunday, but if I wasn't going to the game, you wouldn't know there was a game going on. Whereas before, you would have signs or posters, you know, small things like that we can do. You know, we need to be into local businesses. You know, I raised a point that, you know, do we know the top 20 businesses in Widnes by revenue? And can we get into those? Because if you're asking people to sponsor, the sponsorship money we're asking for would be a small amount compared to some of the smaller businesses, quite a significant amount of their turnover. So are we doing that? And what's that look like? Looking at old sponsors, going back to even when we're in Super League, you know, having a database of old sponsors, are we contacting them? Some of them might have dropped off because of we weren't doing particularly well, or crowds were doing it, or the passion wasn't there, which Alan's brought back, or, you know, even some certain individuals aren't at the club anymore, so that's something they might reinvest. So have we had those conversations? Are we having those conversations? Because if you get a steady income of sponsorship, then, and you renew those year on year, actually, the top up of new sponsorship, A, you don't have to do loads of it, and B, that's all revenue uptick for the club. So we're trying to get a stable basis of sponsors. And then you can add to those new sponsors. So that's from the commercial. We also, you know, Simon also heads up the foundation as well. So, you know, I think we can do more in and around Holton and in schools. You know, I saw a video we did before the Warrington game where Alan went into one of the local primary schools and gave out tickets. And I think then, you know, I think that's something we should do more of. It shouldn't just be the Warrington game to do that. You know, if we can, we can get into more schools, we can give them discounted tickets or, you know, offers in school so we can track where that comes from. You know, that's something we really should be doing. You know, I was in a couple of days before the Warrington game, I was stood in the East Stand with Stuart. And I said, our ambition should be that we fill this. You know, we paid to have it cleaned because it had been mothballed for since COVID actually. But it should be our ambition to fill that and fill the North Stand. So when there's, you know, talks to the council about they might have to shut X section of the North Stand, that actually if we fill it, then they don't have a decision to make. Granted, we're not going to fill it overnight, but that's something that as a board, our ambition should be to fill that, whether that's through school kids, whether that's through fans coming in and new fans. And also linked to that, we've got to make our match day experience enjoyable. You know, we've got to want, you know, these people who are coming for one game to come back. Kids, you know, what are they taking away tangibly? Unfortunately, when I was younger watching Witness, we had paper tickets, but that's all gone now. So, you know, what tangibly can kids and children take away from the, you know, from the match? Is it a team sheet? Is it I went to Toulouse and they did an A4 sheet of all their team and fixture on the back with a couple of sponsors, something that they can take away, get signed at the end, so they feel like there's something they want to go back for. You know, again, this is all stuff, you know, we can be doing, but it's just finding the time and the resource to do it. But certainly that's our plans. Because if you're good on the field and you make it an enjoyable experience off the field, then, you know, you'd like to think that people, you know, the 4,500, 5,000 people who came in from Widnes for the Warrens game keep coming back.
Yeah, and I won't keep you too much longer, Matt, but what is the message to the fans? Like, what can the fans do to help? So, you know, obviously the fans that are already in week out, I guess in some ways they're not the problem because they're coming week in, week out. But is there anything that fans can do to help support pushing the club forward?
Absolutely. I say, you know, bring a friend, you know, bring a family member who might not have been, you know, get them to see it. Because once you're in it and once you see, you know, the passion that Alan has brought back that's probably been lacking for a long time, I would say, then people can get, you know, people can be hooked onto that, and it's quite easy to be hooked on that. If people have got any ideas, certainly speak to somebody on the board, speak to one of us who's on the board. You know, some of us are on social media, some of us aren't, so, you know, speak to us, tell us what we can be doing. Obviously we can't do everything and we won't commit to everything, but certainly getting some ideas from the fans, that thing that our fans will do, and just keep pushing Widnes. You know, we can only be successful on the field and off field from the fans that come in, and we've got a good core group of fans which has increased. And what's been really good for me to see is that there are a lot of new faces that I don't really recognise. When you go home and away, you sort of, more so away, you recognise similar sort of faces. It's good that we're seeing new faces, and we need to keep driving that so our core fan base gets bigger and bigger. But if there's any ideas people have got, or anything we could be doing, or anything we could be doing better, anything we're not doing that we could be doing, please reach out. Or equally, anything that you think we're doing really well that we need to be doing more of, you know, just communicate to us, tell us, and we'll keep doing that.
Brilliant, sounds good. Where did you used to sit, or where do you have you had to change your seat since you became part of the board, Matt, or are you still sitting in the same place?
Well, I still sit in the same place, James. One thing I made it very clear to Stuart is that I have always sat in the North Stand, and I'm a fan. You know, I think I'll say that I'm a fan first, who just so happens to be a shareholder second. The only reason I go is for that passion of being a fan and that emotional roller coaster you go through during those 80 minutes. So I will always sit in the North Stand. I had my same seat in the North Stand. And I won't deviate away from that. Away games, I'll always go and sit in the away stand if that permits, or in the away end, because that's what I like. That's what got me supporting myself. That's got me hooked, and I won't ever change that. If that had to change, but I don't think it would, then I would rather be a fan first, because that's where I go, and I love the club. Love the town, even though I'm not from there, and all I want to do is see it succeed, and I want to play my part in doing that.
I thought you were going to say that you already sat in the posh seats for a minute, but I'll let you off.
No, I don't sit in the posh seats. The passion would probably not go down too well in the posh seats, which is why I tend to go around to the north stand.
To be honest, I would quite like the commentary position to be over on the north stand, because I must admit I do miss going over in the north stand, and that's one of the things that has slightly different circumstances to you, of course, but. Certainly miss going games with my dad. Definitely, obviously, yeah, I have to work a bit more now, and certainly miss going and sitting in the north stand with my dad. That's one of the downsides of doing it for work now. But like you say, that was why we all got hooked. And yeah, fair play to you for that. Thanks, Matt, very much for joining us. Much appreciated, and I'm sure you'll be inundated with people's ideas now.
No problems. Thank you, James.
Right then, so before we let you go, we've got to go through our championship predictions. I've not had a proper look at this, but I've got a feeling that Mike's...
I think I've reeled you back in, James.
I think you're probably right, because Barrow picked up a good win. We didn't predict this one. Barrow had an excellent win for them away at Bradford. At Oddsall, Barrow having a really good start to the season. They've won 3 out of 4.
Quick one on that one, James. Bradford 2 from 4. Surprise. Like, what do you reckon's going wrong there? Too much pressure on them? Are they fell in love with themselves? Are they not as good as what people have made them out to be? Or
yeah, I mean, I think there's a little bit of maybe falling in love with themselves. I think maybe there's a little bit of, you know, Brian Noble's not, he's not coached for a long time. As is he one of them where he's a victim of the game's moved on a little bit from stuff that had worked for him previously. I still think they'll be up there or thereabouts. But certainly you wouldn't... Well, we didn't. They've only scored 12 points in 2 matches now, Bradford. I do worry how much of a difference the pitch makes for Bradford, because I don't know whether it's a... I don't really see it being an advantage to them having that pitch, because you can't even build a team. You can't build your game on expansive rugby when every other week you're playing at Oddsall, and that then makes it of course difficult in the alternate weeks to turn it on when you're playing, you know, Toulouse away. But at the same time, you would expect them to be able to beat Barrow. But then at the same time, I suppose Barrow might have looked at it and thought, well, playing on a smaller pitch suits them.
There's a lot of similar sides in the championship like that, though, isn't there? And that's probably the uniqueness of the division. You've them sides that were grouped together in the middle, the one thing that they all will do is they'll roll the sleeves up and have a go. And at Oddsall, that's what you've got to do to win the game. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, so... I still think Bradford will be up there, but yeah, they've lost 2 out of 4. Toulouse beat Hunslet pretty comfortably. I think Toulouse are probably going to roll most teams over now they've got into the swing of things. And then on Sunday, this was one that you got right and I got wrong, was York won at Batley. 23-10. That was a good tip by you. Widnes, of course, won. We both tipped that. Halifax beat Featherstone and Oldham beat London. So, what's that? You got 5, I got 4, which puts us level square at 18 all. Going into this weekend, of course, Widnes not got a game, but everyone else is playing. Saturday night is London Broncos against Hunslet.
Yeah, well, is that? Am I right in saying that's the bottom two, is it, James?
London. Yes, yeah. I think you're right. Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, obviously, Hunslet give Widnes a really good game, but everyone else seems to have been wiping the floor with them.
I'll go ahead with this one first. I was surprised London beat Featherstone. And then I was also surprised how comfortably Oldham beat London. So I think you've probably, with that, got something somewhere in the middle. I think London are a team who are going to improve along as they go. And I think Huntsler, unfortunately, I don't want to take anything away from their efforts when Widnes played them, but that could go down as maybe one of Widnes's, not worst, but most sloppiest, slackest performances. So I can only see a London win in that one, mate.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think Huntsler actually had two really good performances against Widnes and Bradford, and they were sort of upbeat, but then they got tonked by Doncaster at home, and then they got tonked by Toulouse last week. So, I think with a long trip to London, I think you'd have to say, yeah, we'll both go London for that one. Also on Saturday night is Doncaster against Toulouse.
Again, I'm going to go for Toulouse, but what I will say is, I think looking at the fixtures this week, that could potentially be the one where there's a bit of a shock, because I think Doncaster will be gutted they didn't beat Widnes, and there was a lot on show where they've got the middles to do it, and if it clicks out wide, they've got points in them. But I've got to go for Toulouse, and I've got to tip my hat out to Toulouse, because they was under, mark my words, when Widnes beat Toulouse in Toulouse, they was under pressure, and they had the situation where Anthony Marion was in the halves, etc., and they've come out the other side, and they're just like you just said, they're just starting to bubble away now and start getting in the groove a bit. So I'll go for Toulouse.
Yeah, Toulouse have won their last two matches by 86 points to 10.
Well, there you go.
They had a 7-6 against York, which was their only away game so far. The other benefit I always feel Toulouse have at this time of year is that they get the odd week off because they don't play in the cups.
Never thought of that, but that's
yes, true. You know, so I think that helps them, because you know, you look, they played Widnes and York in back to back weeks. Then they had a week off. Then they played Bradford. Then they had a week off. Then they played Huntsler. They're playing Doncaster this week. Then they've got a week off next week. They play Sheffield. Then they've got another week off. Then they play Featherstone. You know, so they can get going without the bumps and bruises that, say, you know, even like Widnes are suffering at the moment. Toulouse can almost ease the way into the season. They only start playing in consecutive weeks in May, by which time they probably hit the straps and they're going. I can't see. I think Toulouse will beat Doncaster this week. The Sunday games. This is a tough one to call. Barrow against York.
Listen here, James. Barrow, for me, I know you got Halifax at the top. Of course you're having, you know, fair play to them. But Barrow, if Barrow and Batley keep going at this ratio, you're going to have some big sides at the bottom, at the foot of the table, aren't you? You know, we were spending some cash.
Yeah, I think Barrow beat York at home.
You reckon? Do you know what? Because they did the business on the hill at Batley, I'm going to go with York.
Featherstone, Bradford.
Featherstone are at home, aren't they? And you've got two sides there who are under pressure. You know, Featherstone, coach gone, couple of halfbacks gone. You know, fans are not happy. They want to be at the top of the table and should be for what they spend, not right at the top, but certainly in that 4-5. And then Bradford as well. I mean, we could be in a world where, what would it be? Five games gone and Bradford have won two games. So I think this could be a really season-defying game for both sides. I've got to back Bradford because of the money that's spent, but put it this way. It'd be interesting what happens at Oddsall if Bradford lost, but I'll go for Bradford. I'll go for Bradford.
Yeah, I think I'll go Bradford as well. Halifax against Batley.
Can't bet against Halifax at the moment. I think they've been flawless. I think the one question mark we've got over Halifax is how long can that side stay fit? You know, Brandon Douglas, exceptional. You know, they missed him massively last year, and I believe by all accounts Jack Anson has come in and and took the shirt by storm, and he's really getting him round the park, and he's kind of done it tough, hasn't he, at Swinton Crusaders, and he got his time at Sheffield, but was never quite the starting halfback. And he was always in the 17. If he wasn't in the halfback, he'd be sometimes at fullback, sometimes at hooker, interchange hooker. I think now he's gone to Halifax, and you know he's really nailing his colours to the mast. And yeah, I think, no disrespect to Batley, but I can't see Halifax at home not winning that.
Yeah, what's interesting is Halifax. Halifax play Hunslet in their next league game, so they, and then they play Bradford at home the week after that. So Halifax could feasibly go into a big crunch home game against Bradford with 6 wins from 6, which would be a tremendous occasion. Yeah, I think Halifax would beat Batley. Then Sheffield against Oldham. I'm going to go Oldham, I think, but I'm not 100% convinced, but yeah, that's what I'm going.
This is a lottery for me with Oldham. I stick to my guns and say week to week you're going to get different things from Oldham. I'm torn with this one. Do you know what? I've got to go with my instinct, mate. I've got to go with my gut instinct, and I'm going to go home and win Sheffield.
Yeah, I mean, Sheffield, they had a good win against Featherstone last week. They put a lot of points over Doncaster. Oldham have basically put 50 on three teams at home this season. And then, you know, they lost at Barrow. Their only other away game really of note has been Hull KR. So it's hard to get a grasp really of, I mean, Barrow's a almost a bit of an anomaly really. So this is almost like their first standard away fixture. So we might have a better idea of where Barrow are at after this weekend's games. Obviously, Widnes, no game. It's the bye week. There's 13 teams in the Championship this season. So every week a team has a week off. The lowest Widnes could drop this weekend is 6th in the table. That would only happen if Oldham and Bradford, well, if Oldham drew or won, and if Bradford won by more than 12, both of those things have got to happen to knock Widnes down to 6th. But, you know, it's very, very, very early in this season. And
just quickly, whilst you kind of said that, and we've obviously gone through the fixtures for this week, and obviously we've got a week off now. What do you make of the start of the season? Happy? Do you think Alan will be happy? Do you think we're content, in a good position to kick off?
I think Widnes, they've won. Alan did say going 3-1 is a big difference to being 2-2. I think there's a little bit of, you'd probably be a little bit disappointed that they've not won them all, because they were in a winning position at Batley. But then at the same time, they've probably had a couple of games where they've maybe had a little bit of fortune to come out on the winning side. And we know, we've seen seasons, haven't we, over the last few years where Widnes have started really well and then fell away. I think it's probably based on that, it's probably too early to make a real proper judgment, because ultimately Widnes' seasons have almost been defined by what happens in April and May. And that, of course, starts next week. But yeah, I think you've got to be content. If you win 75% of your games, you're not going to be far away, are you, at the end of the season? So clearly Alan wants to add bodies to the squad. I don't know exactly where or exactly who, but I'd expect to see some movement with that in the next few weeks, maybe.
If you're a coach, James, what positions would you be targeting?
I mean, it's difficult because I don't see a great deal of value in bringing players in who aren't going to go straight into the team. And I think when you look at when you look at Widnes at the moment, I don't necessarily see there's not a if you have your first choice 13, there's not really a position that I think, oh, maybe centre, but then if you're going to have this fullback situation, if Joe Edge is back and Jack Owens is going to play centre, then it lessens the need to add a centre there. I mean, Hooker's clearly a bit of an issue because of the Jordan Johnston situation. But at the same time, you're not bringing a hooker in. You know, Matty Fozard's at least a 60-minute hooker. So it's like, you're not going to bring in a starting hooker, are you, really? I guess he's probably adding another middle, maybe, that just give, you know, that gives you a little bit more quality or a little bit more depth. It surprises me a little bit that I actually don't see a massive issue with Widnes' squad at the moment, to be perfectly honest. I think if you get Joe Edge back and if everyone stays fit, I think it's hard to see where they could pull someone in that's going to add to it immediately, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think for me it probably would be a middle, potentially back row, because I think although what you've said there is spot on when everybody's fit, and you know, at the minute, you know, we are running where you want a 17 who you name in, you know, it's strong. But I suppose from a coach's perspective and, you know, a club's perspective, injuries can strike at any time. And, you know, if you're losing 2-3 injuries in one game, then that can massively change things. Very difficult, of course, you know, trying to balance that, because the opposite could happen and you've got some unhappy players not getting in the team. But I think when we look at the middle channel, I suppose, you know, you've got Max Wood, who we were saying before was on that bit of a seesaw of Warrington, Widnes, you know, he's on that kind of level. And all right, Kirky's just come back now. I don't think Gav Bennion's ripped up trees, if I'm being completely honest. And I think we said in pre-season as well, you know, I don't think you can have too many middles. But then you look, you've got Brett Bailey, who's come back and he's gone to St. Helens reserves on loan. And, you know, if you do bring in another middle ahead of him, then, you know, you're scratching your head with, you know, the players that left a couple of weeks ago, thinking, well, it's great, he's from the town, he's young and everybody wants him to succeed, but then it kind of defeats the object of having him in your squad as well. So it is a tough one, but I'd probably say another forward. I don't think you can be too short of forwards, really, but that's just me.
Yeah, right. Well, thanks everyone for joining us. No game this weekend, but we'll be back next week to look ahead to the Crunch 1895 Cup quarterfinal against York. For myself and Mike, have a good weekend and we'll see you next week.